Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Let's get underway.
Saturdays were made for this. The biggest names and the biggest games. Right here.
Woo! For King G, where comfort is king.
2, 3, 4! Hey, ho, let's go!
Triple M rocks the NRL.
Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Scrum.
Great to be with you. A couple of hours for kickoff. Manly taking on the Gold Coast at Lotto Land. And then, of course, it's the Storm and the West Tigers. The Roosters take on the Sharkies at the SCG. 7:35 tonight. Sturlo joins us at 2 o'clock. Brad Fittler is joining the show in not too long at all. Read his mail. There's so much to get through in the 2 hours we get to share. I think we might even be having a chat with Maroon before he goes to call the game.
Is that right?
Yeah. There's been some kind of bet. I've been reading the newspaper, so we'll have a look at that a little bit later in the show as well. Looking at that Taipower scoreboard, the Eels too good for the Broncos, 26 points to 12, and it was the Panthers sealing the minor premiership with a 32 points to 12 win over the Cowboys in Townsville. Ivan Cleary, I love this about him. He didn't sort of back away from it. He was thrilled to get the minor premiership. He was thrilled to say that it put his team up with those who have, like the Roosters and Storm, who have won the minor premierships so many times over the past decade, and says they are the teams, the consistent and great teams. He talked about what happens in, you know, Europe and with football, the EPL, the first past the post, that premiership is the key one. You got to, when you get those achievements, you've got to grab them, yeah?
That's the balance, Tone, isn't it? Because they're a group of young guys that have never experienced something like that before as well, so you can't get overexcited with it. But, yeah, I think it needs to certainly be acknowledged. They were really impressive again last night, and I just want to congratulate the whole organisation, like what a turnaround it's been from, you know, what was a pretty poor season last year, and not just over the last couple of years to get themselves into this position, but with all these junior, the systems they've put in place for all these juniors to be coming through now and representing the way that they are. And there's some good articles in the paper over the last few weeks about all these local guys that have come through and done it tough at times, but and now, you know, from making good choices, and I think that's what we're going to talk to Freddie about when he comes on later on, just making good choices at those right ages for these guys and being dedicated and getting a great work ethic coming through now and reaping the rewards. And congratulations to the boys and that whole community out there. I mean, the Penrith community, they don't get to see, they don't have sustained success, Tony.
Yep.
It comes, you know, we had a bit in the early 2000s where we, you know, we didn't even make the finals before, you know, the year before we won it. Then in 04, we made the prelim and then we sort of fell away again in 05. So we're not like a Roosters or a Storm that, or the Broncos that, you know, spend long periods at the top. So when we get there, the community really enjoy that and they'd be loving it at the moment.
Yeah, indeed. That consistency that is in the measure of it, that kind of does bring confidence, doesn't it? And that's why they can go forward now with that.
It does. And I think if you look at, there's been a lot of people put a lot of time into Penrith to get to this stage. And it's probably been a 7 or 8 year journey, I suppose. And whilst the club has fallen away at times in the past and not maintained consistency, if you look at what they got in place with their centre of excellence, and obviously there's some systems they got with their younger players, if they manage their cap well and make smart decisions, which is, you know, what the clubs that consistently are up in the top four do, if they can do that well, I don't see why there's a reason with the age of their squad why they can have some sustained success. It's young Nathan's obviously going to be there for a fair period, and they've got Appy there for a period, so they've got some blokes in key positions, and a lot of their players are at good ages, aren't they? Like the Fisher Harrises and Yeos and these blokes are coming into the sweet spot of their career, and they've got a good batch of younger ones who have obviously gaining some good experience and are very, very good players. So I can see Penrith, if they manage their cap well and, as I said, make some smart decisions, when to let people go.
Who to let go over the next couple of years, Brownie, is crucial.
Yeah, it's going to be crucial for me. Yep. And you have to have there's got to be a ceiling on what you may pay certain players in certain positions, because what you're going to see with Penrith is they're going to have a number of players that are going to appear at other clubs because they're going to have too many good players, which is, you only got to look at the moment with young Hetherington, who went to the Warriors on loan, And he was, you know, arguably when he was there, one of the more influential players at the Warriors whilst he was there till he got suspended. And he wasn't even getting named in the 21, you know. So you're going to see some good players from Penrith appear at other clubs. But which ones they let go and how they manage, that'll be the key to their sustained success.
Well, they've even, just an example is the fact that they've had to, they needed leadership and they had Jimmy Tamo, but now they've got all of those young players coming through and recognise that potentially those guys can do the job and had to let Jimmy Tamo go. But again, it was very well handled. It wasn't messy. Ivan had that conversation with him, was up front from word go. Jimmy was very honest in the media and said, I understand that. I respect that. He's now gone and signed with the West Tigers. So, and it's just, I guess, a credit to Penrith that they've got all those juniors coming through. And all of these boys we talk about, Crichton, Luai, Cleary, they've all had, I know they've won the minor premiership first time in a long time. Penrith have done that, but they've all been successful through Harold Matz, SG Ball, the 20s. They've gone and won on a couple of 20s comps together, all of those guys. So they've had a lot of success coming through the junior grades and played together. And a lot of them are really good friends as well.
Yeah,
they're not just teammates, this group of guys that have been put together. They've come through and been friends for 6 or 7 years. So I think it's that makes a difference that they're a lot tighter than other teams. I know you don't have to be best friends with everyone, but you really notice that Penrith group are a really tight-knit group.
And they're enjoying each other's success. Yeah. And they're a joy to watch, Tony.
Yeah.
And what's impressed me, and I spoke about earlier in the last couple of weeks, is they've put a game together that really suits their style and they really stick to their plan. And they're going to get tested at the back end of the season because, you know, sides are going to, you know, put them in uncomfortable positions, the better sides. And they probably haven't felt that probably over the last month or so, where they're not going to let things go all their own way. And they've had some challenges and they had moments last night in that game. They were never threatened last night, but there was moments in that game where the momentum swung and they have to handle different situations. But that'll certainly change at the back end of the season when they come up against those more experienced sides, you know, in those big games. But they play with such a plan that wherever they end up on the field, they always get the ball where it needs to go. They always end up getting into a nice spot on the field that gives Nathan plenty of time, and he's got the best kicking game in the competition. So they've got three guys at the back that every week run for 200 metres each. When they get themselves into the middle of the field, they've got two edge attack back rowers that are just like, there's no better running back row in the game than Kikau at the moment. And Martin must be up there as well. So they're always threatening the defence. And then they just, you know, get to their kick and they're super patient. They build their game. And they could have come out last night and tried to blow the Cowboys off the park early, but they don't do that. They don't have that mentality. And that's what really impresses me, because they're a young side. They don't get overexcited, go out there and try and score off every play. They go out there and build their game and get themselves into an unbeatable situation, and then they can get a bit loose from time to time. But, you know, the damage has already been done. They're really impressive.
It's outstanding that with Nathan, that he's right up there and one of the favourites for the Dally M, yet he lost six points because of that TikTok drama.
Yeah.
Yet losing 6 points. Imagine what a story that would be if he ends up getting
ridiculous.
Well, he's been the best player all year. Yeah. And generally the Dally M goes to the best player all year. So it'd be a shame if he wasn't to win it, because
but having lost 6 points to go and win it, that would be
a little bit ridiculous. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, you mentioned Kikau. Now what's the story with him? He only
gets a fine.
A fine, so he will be able to play. Will he play next week is the question. Nathan Brown, if you're coach Ivan Cleary at the moment, you've got the minor premiership in the bag. You've got one round to go before you start playing those finals. Are you resting players?
Oh, look, I think they've certainly got to look at it. I think we saw some different players play last night for the Panthers, and I would have thought any player that's carrying any sort of niggling injury that's got the potential to get worse or stop the player training during the finals period, I would have thought Ivan would rest them. They're not playing like a tired team,
that's
are
right.
they? You know, so they've had a much better pathway because of no flying than what the Melbourne Storms and some of these other sides have had. You know, so, you know, are they under as much pressure to rest people? I would have thought not, but I would have definitely thought Ivan would rest blokes if they're carrying a bump or a bruise, or if they think they may need a rest, or otherwise they might like to choose to go in with, you know, the momentum because they are playing very, very good football. It's been a long, long time since they've lost. But
14 games.
Yeah,
in a row.
So, but it'll be the big challenge for Penrith will be is when the heat's on, if their place can come up against Cameron Smith and Cameron Munster and Luke Keary and the Ted, yeah. And can they come up with the right plays under pressure in sudden death footy? And that comes through practice. So we won't know till we see it.
It's a big call on next week because they've got a lot of momentum at the moment. There's potentially, if they do everything really well, and there's no reason to think that they won't, is there's only four games to go. They've got next week and then they've got a home semi-final. If they win that, they go into the prelim and then there's obviously the prelim and the final. So there's not a lot of footy left. And as Brownie said, you know, they've dominated sort of the last month of footy, so they're probably not coming out of games feeling as lethargic as a lot of other clubs would, and then you add the travel to that. And if you look at most of their games, the possession rates, they're up at around 60%. So they're not doing as much work on a weekly basis as well as the other groups. And what you don't want to do is take the foot off the throttle and then next week have a bit of a patchy performance against the Bulldogs, who are coming off a good win, then go into the finals with any doubts at all. You just want to keep, while you're hot, you just got to keep rolling on. So I'd be very surprised if, you know, you see a side that different to the one that took the field today, but there might be, you know, two or three other changes.
Well, they're certainly hot at the moment. As I said, 14 wins on the trot. They've lost just one game in this season. The last time they won minor premierships, or the two that they have won, they went on to win the grand final. Will that be the story for the Panthers of 2020? We will find out. We'll also speak with Brad Fittler very shortly, Coach's Corner as well, on the Saturday's Scrum, thanks to King G. Saturday afternoon, doing it all for King G. This is the Saturday Scrum. And it's time to head towards this.
The Coach's Corner with Nathan Brown.
Yes, indeed. Always looking forward to the Coach's Corner just to get a little bit of insight. Of course, as we know, the incoming coach of the New Zealand Warriors, Nathan Brown. Where are you taking us and why?
I'm just talking about coaches, and obviously a coach's job is to manipulate the rules. Mm-hmm. To get an advantage, I suppose you'd like to say, for your team or your club. And we've seen the two big rule changes this year, which have had a great effect on the game. I think everyone agrees, the six again.
Yep.
One, and the scrum being able to, you position the scrum pretty much in any one of the positions you like to, which, you know, most clubs are positioning from the middle of the field. And
attacking options.
And we've seen a lot of tries on play one from the scrum, which is not something we've seen a lot of in the past sort of years, you know?
Yep.
So with the six again, it's pretty clear when you watch it, coaches are pretty happy to give away a play one penalty on the kick return. So if they give away a penalty on play one, it allows the line to be set because the six again, it's still a slow play, the ball, and then they get to tee off on the next two or three plays. So I would have thought that our people running the game probably need to have a look at the way to combat that. Probably the only way to combat it is if it's a tackle one penalty, as it actually give a penalty, because coaches will then discourage players from giving away a penalty. And the one from the scrum, obviously players are leaving early, which then gives away a penalty, which has no effect on the opposition team because you can't kick for goal. Where back in the day, the differential penalty could take 2 points.
Yep.
I would make that a differential penalty again and allow clubs to take the 2 points because, again, coaches would be, let's say, less encouraging for players to give away penalties in that situation.
Are you noticing certain sides in particular manipulating those rules, or do you think just everyone across the board?
Well, what happens is, you know, someone will do it and players learn from players. You know, we talk about players going down injured.
Mm-hmm.
If a player sees another player from another club go down hurt, where he's sort of not really hurt but he's looking for a penalty, then other players will copy off players if they think they're going to get an advantage out of it. So what happens is, whether it be a coach or a senior player comes up with an idea that helps manipulate the rules, other clubs and other coaches and other players, all everyone does is then copies off it. You know, so the whichever coach may have encouraged it first in either one of the situations, then more people start to do it because obviously it has a good effect on your team winning.
Yeah, I've certainly noticed, and it's been spoken about in commentary of late, that first, or sometimes second, but certainly that first tackle, the set, you know, restart is much more prominent, isn't it?
So, way before, because if you win that one, it gives your line a really good chance to get set. And then the next couple of plays, if it's a side's hungry and keen, they can really tee off on the bloke carrying the ball. And, you know, everyone knows that if you win the first sort of two or three plays, well, the set's very nullified. Where if you lose that first one or the second one, the set really quickens up, and then the good sides get an opportunity to attack or put the ball in a really bad spot.
What have you made of the other decision, which was to go back to one ref?
It seems to have been great, hasn't it? Yeah. I was always happy with the two referees. I thought it had...
the game had moved past one, yeah.
Divided, split the sort of responsibility. But, when you talk to, different people and referees and what sort of negative impact, I suppose, it was having from what they said, there was too many people getting involved and too many people talking. And I suppose at the end of the day, two referees, you got two different styles of refs. But I think the one referee's been great. Yeah, as I said, we're not really talking about refs much. Most of the stuff we've been talking about in with the media, I suppose, or the negative stuff is more the bunker, more video referee stuff, but we're really talking about the referee on the field having a negative influence on games, which I think is great. Mm.
Is one of the fun things about coaching that, you and your assistants just sitting around and looking at the rules and going, how can I, your word, manipulate that? How can I take best advantage of what's set in front of me?
That's what coaches do. That's what coaching is. It's about trying to get an advantage, an advantage over the opposition. And I suppose was an old bloke once said to me, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, he said. So good old Aussie philosophy it was, yeah. But it's what the game is. And whenever rules change, rules are changed because coaches come up with ways around them, I suppose. And anytime there is every action has a reaction, doesn't it? And there's just been a couple of real clear ones, which the game's got a great benefit out of these rule changes. The coaches have got to try and find a way, how can I turn that into advantage for my club, and that's pretty much what coaching's all about.
And then it goes back to the administrators to see if they can...
Well, that's what I was just, but if tackle one on a kick return penalty. Was actually a penalty,
yep.
The coaches will stop doing it. And if play one from a scrum can be a goal kick, give away 2 points, that'd probably help nullify that as well.
Brilliant. Speaking of brilliant, we're going to catch up with Brad Fittler next on the Saturday Scrum.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Brownie, Emma, Gert and Tony Squires with you, and as always, an absolute immense pleasure to welcome to the show the New South Wales coach, Mr. Brad Fittler. Freddie, g'day.
Good afternoon, gent. And glasses.
That's exactly. I'm just trying to look. There's so much to talk to you about. Just wondering where to start first. You know what I'm going to start with? There's an old Panthers alumni. How's it feel that they've got the minor premiership in their grasp, 2020?
I think the most impressive part is how they play. They work together so well, and they just have this energy about them. When you watch them, it's hard not to smile and respect what they're involved in. I just... loving watching them play at the moment, and whether semi-finals and the pressure of semi-finals proves too much, I'm not really sure. I don't know why it would, but at the moment, I don't think I've seen a team, with the energy they play with. They're fantastic.
What about Adelaide as a second point here? Now that we sort of knew, but it's been made official during the week. You're looking forward to heading to the City of Churches?
Absolutely. I've been over there for a couple of games when the Roosters played Melbourne, and it was an awesome atmosphere. The history of the ground is quite remarkable. It's one of those places you walk around, it's like being in a museum. So, a lot of our blokes mightn't have been to Adelaide, let alone played on the Oval. But it's going to happen. How we go about it is still a bit unsure, whether we fly in and fly out or we actually get to stay there. But there are all the minor details, but we're much forward, looking forward to it.
What about camp and that, Bradley? Where are you going to, have you got a place already, and how are you going to handle, because you're going to have to be in the bubble for a while, old boy, aren't you?
I'll be bubbling.
You love the bubble. You might never come out of the bubble.
I'll be bubbling.
People have got a lot of trouble for that in the past, so be careful.
You're a born bubbler, weren't you?
There's lots of different levels of bubbling, but the one I think that would suit me would be in a resort up on the Central Coast, and close to a beach, and there's a golf course on as well. So there'll be plenty for the blokes to do, and I think it's still going to be one of those times where we need to nail that. Well, they've been through a tough year, and how they're feeling mentally and physically, but we need to be able to nail that time together. And I think the place we're staying at gives us a good chance.
You, mate, what are you going to do You're going to have a lot of guys, and we're going to, I think we're going to be pretty lucky this year. We're going to have a big complement of the guys that go into your side in the finals. But what are you going to do with the guys? Is it going to be like, you know, the Kangaroos and they just need to do some training on their own? Are you going to take a group away for that period who don't play finals? How are you going to work that?
Well, they've got protocols around blokes who finish. They have some time off. It's all the importance of rest for the players, obviously, through the Players Association and just, you know, making sure we look after the athletes. So, you know, we're going to ask them, obviously, to stay fit. You know, the fact is they can't be going overseas or there's not that much to do, really. So I think they're getting used to not doing much. But then we'll have a lot of players in semi-finals. So we're sort of still working out how we're going to notify the players. And the size of the squad is been confirmed to 27. So it's going to be pretty tricky. But, you know, this year ain't the time to complain. It's just get on with it, really.
Freddie, do you have any fear that any players, after being in the situation with the COVID virus, that some players will make themselves unavailable at the end of the year?
I don't fear it, Brownie, but if it happens, it happens. It's hard to live in someone else's shoes this year. It'd be some pretty interesting year, 2020. So, you know, some players would be sort of fed up with it, but, mate, like if it was me and I was 22, you know, I was born to be in a bubble.
And would it be fair to say, Fred, that if Luke Keary's fit, he'd make his Origin debut at the end of this year?
It'd be awesome to be able to bring Luke into the team. He's just the way he plays, Brownie.
Yeah, outstanding, yeah.
Oh, he's outstanding, you know, and you sort of look back and that's the South Grand Final they won, you know. I think a lot of people forget the impact he had coming on the field at the time he did. And, you know, what he's done at the Roosters is quite incredible as well. So not only can play, mate, he's obviously really loved by his teammates because they all talk so highly of him. And we've had him involved, but at the times when it's needed to play, he's been injured. So it'd be awesome to get him involved.
Freddie, you've always done a lot of work in the community, and I know I've been lucky enough to do a couple of trips with you at the end of last year to see some bushfire victims and things like that. But there's a great article in the paper with the work you're doing with some youths and trying to get them out of gangs and on the straight and narrow. Can you tell us a bit about that work and how you got into that and why you love that stuff so much?
Well, I think it comes to everyone's attention with all the hand signals and all that sort of junk. And then when someone got stabbed just recently at a game between a couple of C-grade sides, that sort of really came to our attention. We know there's been different levels of violence. We have a Harmony Cup where all the different nations from pretty much around the world, we hold a cup where they come together. And there were some gangs and some kids saw they'd use that as a time and a place to vent their anger. And, you know, and these days, too, they're carrying weapons. You know, you imagine being 17-year-old and think you need to carry a weapon for your own safety. That's like just ludicrous. So, you know, somewhere along the line, we're letting these kids down to be living under that type of fear. So I've always thought I never used the police boys clubs enough when I was a teenager myself. And in times now and over the last, since I've retired, I've used them an awful lot and just see how, you know, they're a great haven for people to go to. And they don't just do boxing and touch footy, they do basketball and all sorts of, you know, arts and music. And we just need to give these kids places to go, like even having a disco. Like, you're a 16-year-old kid now and you don't want to drink alcohol in a park, you know, at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. There's very little to do. So, you know, we need to start, you know, getting some stuff going for these kids. Mm. And all we're watching them do at the moment is standing back and just watching them getting addicted to social media and ridiculous games. And we're not doing nothing about it. It's criminal how we're just standing and allowing social media to just manipulate everyone and control everyone's lives.
And the issue is that people are doing it, I guess, and standing back because it's hard. It's hard to convince kids that to get off any of those kinds of screens. It's hard to convince kids that social media isn't the core element of their life. Mm. So how do you go about making that fundamental change without just throwing our hands in the air and saying it's too hard?
Well, the first place is school. You know, how, you know, a kid shouldn't be able to walk into a classroom with a mobile phone anywhere near them. You know, the level of distraction alone, what, you know, looking at your phone before you go into class is going to affect their ability to learn anything. Now, poor old teachers, they go and do 3 or 4 years at college and, you know, all of a sudden thrown into a room of 30 kids that are totally addicted to things and are all anxious and uptight. So, you know, we're not helping anyone. So, you know, the first things first is we need to find a way just to ban phones from any classrooms. And, you know, and then all of a sudden you're taking, you know, 6 hours a day away from the phones. And then maybe start coming up with some rules on, you know, those notifications and things that keep alerting our kids to be grabbing their phone. Now, there's ways we can do it. And the other way is to go to the big companies and say, well, if you don't change the way you develop your programs.
Yeah, the gaming, you know, Freddie. The gaming's an issue.
Bar it. Well, the gaming never ends. There's no end to the game. They keep playing. You know, it's not a game. It's just like a, you know, play, you know, what is it called? What's that game they all play? Fortnite.
Yep.
There's no end. Grand Theft Auto, there's no end. There's no end. They just keep going forever.
Hey, Freddie, obviously this work you're doing, it would be making such a difference to the lives of these kids and these teenagers. But over the years, has there ever been a moment or potentially a couple where it's just really changed you? Can you pinpoint a couple where you think, wow, the impact it's had on you has been life-changing?
When I finished coaching, just read a lot on just really the psychology and, you know, things that are happening in society. And that was just when social media kicked in. So, you know, and I've also got my own kids at the moment, just watching them deal with social media. My daughter doesn't do it, and she obviously then has, so there's some things around, you know, missing out and, you know, watching the kids at school going through social media and then talking to my young bloke about social media as well. And, you know, one of the other really the huge problems is a lot of our kids are taking their risks on phones and games. You know, there's no risk-taking out in the real world where they can actually learn something. You know, they get angry and, you know, it's just hopeless, really. And it's a bit concerning when the people who can do something about it, because it's really hard for parents and teachers and these sort of people to be, you know, psychiatrists and everything that's needed to draw kids' attentions away from the phone. So, you know, we need to get some hard and fast rules involved where there's particular times a day and there's only a certain amount of times you should be able to be on these things.
Yeah, and you're right. The Police and Community Youth Club is a good place for kids to get to as well. I remember my old man was a copper. I spent a lot of time with the Police Citizens Boys Club, and it was great. Mm. It's exactly what you're saying. And I know that Mick Fuller from the New South Wales Police is right behind you, and as are we. Freddie, it's a great thing you're doing, bud.
Thanks, fellas. And I think you're more saying about making a difference. Like, nothing happens if we don't continue to do stuff. And some major rules need to be changed. But in general, just, you know, working with our kids and talking with them. And there's a really good YouTube at the moment, The Social Dilemma.
Yeah. It's on just Netflix too, I think.
Yeah, just a must watch. You know, it's, you've got people from the gaming industries and the social media industries that talk to you about the platforms and what they're actually doing and how they're manipulating the world through propaganda. And it's just insane that we're sitting there with our hands in our pockets.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Brad Fittler, not one to do that, which is brilliant. Freddie, thanks so much, mate.
How's that smoky look you've handed the camera on the front page of the Telegraph today? I mean, please, have a look at it. You look like you're making love to the camera.
Mate.
The big lips are out, the closed eye.
Good.
The hair's done.
The male photographer just throwing some real body language at me.
Well, you're throwing plenty back.
we nearly got to the next level.
Gerds is jealous. He's been reminding us all that he was once the sexiest man in league. Off air, he won't stop talking about it.
Well, I asked Ryan about when we went to Barcelona and the cuddles Ryan.
Gerds?
I love it.
The maybe cuddles I received, were you about to say?
This may be a story for after 3 o'clock. Freddie, catch up soon.
I can still smell the breath.
There is a great man, Brad Fittler, joining us as ever, just doing some great work in the community. Just getting a note here, Peter Bedell is reporting that David Fifita likely to miss Origin, will need ankle surgery. You should have kept Freddie on for that.
Yeah, you're probably still there.
You're probably still there. David Fifita likely to need ankle surgery.
That's unfortunate. We want our best players playing Origin.
I hate really that hip drop. That's what did it. The hip drop did that. Exactly. We'll talk about some of those decisions again. We'll play a bit of Believe It or Not all ahead. It's the Saturday Scrum for King G.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king.
Triple M rocks footy.
And it's time for a little bit of this action.
Believe it or not, 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 not. Believe it or not.
Very simple. I put a proposition to you. You tell me whether you believe it or not and why. Let's begin. The information we've now got is that the crowds for finals, I think in a month's time or a few weeks' time, start of next month, can be doubled. So we could get 40,000 people at ANZ Stadium, for example, which would be terrific for finals, terrific for grand final. The Panthers, as we know, are the minor premiers at the moment. They have a home semi-final at their stadium. Believe it or not, Penrith should move their home semi to ANZ Stadium to get more people in, Nathan Brown.
Under the current circumstances, I would say no. Under normal rules, when you're allowed to fill the place, and if they played a team from Sydney or something, I'd say yes. But under today's circumstances, I'd say leave it at Penrith.
Leave it at Penrith?
Absolutely not. You can't move it because it's been hard enough for the fans as it is, not being able to go and meet and greet the players afterwards and with these, with COVID. So I think they deserve to have it at Penrith and one, get that genuine advantage and have all of the fans there to be able to experience it because they're such a tight-knit community in Penrith. I think you cannot move it from okay. Penrith Stadium.
You have to agree with that, Ryan Girdle, believe it or not.
Panthers. Under normal circumstances, if they were playing Parramatta,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in that first,
go there, wouldn't you? Yeah,
I would say. Look, I understand the home ground advantage, and obviously plays a part. But I think on the back of what Em said, you know, them knowing the community out there and them not being able to share a lot of the moments throughout the season, given no crowds, now limited crowds, that if they were to move it to ANZ in that first week and they allowed the Penrith fans to have first crack at the tickets, I would do it because then you're going to have 30,000. Penrith fans there that probably haven't been able to share those moments throughout the season to attend that game. And it's a sacrifice the players and the club would make. But to get, you know, that whole community involved and to get as many Panthers fans as you could to that game, I would do it. We played the prelim final against the Warriors out there in 2003. And there was about 44,000 people there. And that place with the right crowd is, you know, fantastic to play in front of it. We went on to obviously make the grand final, got the cash, and I don't think it'll affect their mentality and their performance because they're playing pretty well. They're playing with lots of confidence, and nothing's really bothered them so far.
So what's the capacity at Panthers? Well, 8,000?
8,000,
yeah. So if they had 6,000, 7,000 of Panthers fans. So you're saying the opportunity to actually get along, watch your team in this amazing year outweighs that home ground?
That's what I'm saying, Tony.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
That's a valid point, though. It's the first time I'll give you a rap and never will again, but yeah, I liked that point.
You flipped really quickly there. But let's go in the same kind of area here. Believe it or not, Ivan Cleary is the coach of the year. Emma Lawrence? Well, you can just leave.
Yes, pause. Sorry, it's radio. You kind of paused. No one can see my thinking face.
Who else
face.
Could be the coach of the year?
I was going through the top four and just double checking that.
Okay. Just in your head without actually verbalising it.
Mm. Yes, okay. Mm. I forgot it was radio for 5 seconds there. Ivan Cleary, yes. Just given, I mean, last year they didn't even make the top eight. They had all of that drama, which with off the field. So yep. I think that was obviously a distraction. But to be able to turn that around, keep the group together with everything that went on with COVID as well. They've come back super fit. I think Hayden Knowles has done a great job as well. So I think everyone around Ivan Cleary deserves credit. But yes, I would give it to Ivan Cleary.
Brownie?
Yeah, as Em said, a lot of people would have contributed to the club's success. But you'd have to say with where Penrith sit on the ladder and winning 14 games in a row, it's hard to find an argument not to give it to Ivan.
He's got it. All right. There's been so many. I was just looking this weekend, but a lot of players at the moment seem to be copying either, you know, headshots, accidental or intentional, doesn't matter. But there's a lot of guys going down concussed. Here it is, believe it or not. Ryan Girdle, believe it or not, headgear should be mandatory.
I think I don't believe it should be mandatory, Tone, no.
No?
Because, one, it wouldn't fit a lot of the guys' heads. I think they've done really good things around the junior league, you know, bringing, hey, Pete, talking about headgear.
Stella.
You know, around some of the junior age groups and those kids coming through and up to a certain age, I think it's great compulsory while their brains are developing and maturing. I think it's
important.
Your
brains aren't important once they're developed.
Well, I think they're already developed, Tane. I mean, can't you tell? But Look, yeah, I don't think once guys get to a certain age, they should be able to make their own decisions. I mean, what do you want to live in? You know, what sort of environment do you want to live in? A total dictatorship? You want to be told you need to do something?
One where people are safe.
You don't like to be told what to do, Tony, do you? Imagine being a man and being
told
what to do.
No, you are so wrong. I love rules. Without rules, it is anarchy.
Yeah.
That is what stands between us and carte blanche. We need rules, and this is just another rule.
Well, I don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
I think it's ridiculous. So,
ridiculous. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Emma Lawrence?
I don't think it should be mandatory, no. I think the NRL is, Gerd said it, we're doing a lot of work in that space and all the testing, and I think clubs are doing a great job too. You can just see that with the Roosters and Boyd Cordner taking every precaution possible, but no, I don't think it should be mandatory.
Okay.
It's a big no from you,
I'm
isn't
a no,
it?
Yeah.
Why are you a no? Is there any merit in a discussion?
Well, what does the headgear do for you?
Well, hopefully it would cushion, you know, the blows.
It doesn't help at all. It only protects you from cuts and that type of stuff.
So your brain still rattles inside your head.
Absolutely no evidence that suggests headgear helps you with concussion.
See, Gerds, if you'd come up with the same...
That was the next part of my statement, Tony, but I just...
Coming out of Dr. Brown's mouth, now I understand...
Actually, a brain surgeon told me that.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's just the rattling of the brain inside the skull is what's doing the damage.
Because
you wore headgear for a while, didn't you, when you got...
I had a couple of goes at it, yeah.
It was just to show you what...
Yeah.
So people couldn't see...
My hair was coming out there. It was coming out the side. I was like, get rid of this.
It was a really good look. We might come up with some more, believe it or not. So I've got to get to it right now that this is the Saturday Scrum. We're doing it for King G.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king.
Triple M rocks footy.
Brownie, Emma Lawrence, Ryan Girdler, Tony Squires with you. Sterla will join us at 2 o'clock, heading towards kickoff. Manly taking on the Gold Coast Titans. That is at 3 p.m. All right, just a quick look before we get to the top of the hour. South Sydney, what do you make of that performance? The Bulldogs climbed off the bottom of the ladder with that 26-16 win Thursday night. Josh Jackson's 200th game, and they turned up, didn't they, Nathan?
Yeah, a lot to play for. Very, very popular player, Josh Jackson. Been a great clubman for Canterbury, and he's obviously... Yeah, you know, had to lead Canterbury, I suppose, through its most difficult period, probably near enough in the club's history, I'd have thought, you know, like it's very where Canterbury have been in the previous years is not what we come to see of Canterbury in the 70s, 80s, to early 2000s. So he's, yeah, very, very popular guy and been a very good player for the club for a long time.
You could see how much he means to them just at the end of the game where every single player rushed up straight away, even if they were 50 metres away to, you know, to get around him. And speaking to the club, they did a little, can't do a lot because of COVID, but they did a presentation where Aidan Tolman spoke, gave him his jersey. Steve Price spoke as well. And it was very emotional, apparently. Some of the boys had tears, Josh as well. So, yeah, he's the heart and soul of that club. And I think it was a perfect way. He had a great game as well. A couple of try-saving tackles right on the line. Aidan Tolman was outstanding for them as well.
I think he started in the middle, and he you know, used his ball skills and made a couple of really good runs, and he had a good night out, and he had some company. But I think South Sydney just been guilty probably over the last month or so of just doing enough to win footy games, and they know they've got the talent to do it, and I think sometimes they rely on that talent just a little bit too much, let themselves get in front and then take the foot off, or let themselves get behind like they did the other day. I think it wasn't until the 35th minute or something until they scored their first points against the side
20-0.
Coming last. Yeah. So... I don't think that's the right sort of approach before a final series. You need to be, as those sides are, as we spoke about earlier on in the show, you need to be hitting sort of top pace now and then building on into the finals as opposed to just sort of limping in. And I guess that's where they are at the moment. And they've got some guys there. They've got the sewer incident now. Obviously, they play the Roosters this week. So that's the other thing for South. They really haven't played a lot of people of note of late, and we get a real good indication of where they will be next week. But...
So they've Jason Sewell gets a 1 week.
Sewell won't play. Yeah. And then they've got some young guys like Sirenin, and like Knight, young Paulo, Masters, Graham, that haven't got a lot of finals experience. Allen. So you don't want to be relying on those guys to play their best footy in the finals if their form leading in isn't good and they don't go in with confidence. So there's some concerning signs for the Rabbits.
Jackson Paulo, it's luckily that try didn't affect the result because that was just mind-boggling.
We go upstairs so often, so it's just crazy that one was given straight away. But again, I mean, the thing is that's what started the comeback from South, so it could very easily have made a difference. Gerds?
We can't complain about that, Tony, because we always say make a decision, make a decision, make a decision. So when they make a decision, if they get it wrong, we can't complain about it. I'm happy for them to make a decision.
No, really? You are.
That's not what you said.
You're happy to make a decision. Penrith in the grand final, and that's the decision that's made. You're happy.
No, I'm not happy at all if that happens in the grand final.
Yeah. The touch judge has been dropped. I think he was going to run
that's an overreaction. Well, he can get the decision wrong, but doesn't it then come back to the on-field referee to send it up? The linesman can't send it up.
No, but the linesman can say, no, he's clear.
Well, he might have got the call wrong. And you got it to his defence, and I love defending the referees.
No, of course you do.
When the ball looked like it was going to go down the first time, he sort of paused a little bit, Paulo, and then it went down the second time, and the linesman was back there, so he wouldn't have had a good view of when that ball touched the ground.
When you go out to a half a break, half an hour break at 2 o'clock, can you send the real Ryan Girdler back in?
In our rundown, it said Gerds was going to have a crack.
Gerds' spray at the that decision.
I'll tell you, what does a rundown mean to you anyway?
It means everything. Without it, there's anarchy. I've told you this before.
All right. No, I think they're doing a great job, the rest.
South Sydney, the Joseph Suwali, the chase for him seems to be they're a little concerned about the contract, the details within it. He wants basically a get-out clause in his favour for each year. This is his young kid playing at the rugby at the King's School at the moment, and he's contracted to South Sydney.
I think it's quite disappointing that a kid of that age is having his contract details played out in the paper, and Wayne Bennett's already made a point of that. So my advice for his parents would be to basically get someone involved with their son who's actually going to keep things a little bit private, because at this stage, if he's demanding those things, it's not going to make him real popular with his teammates. There's rather silly demands for mine. Yep. The kid needs stability. He's 16 years or 17 years of age. He's obviously an outstanding talent. We've all seen him play. But Kalen Ponga come to the Knights and he signed a 4-year contract with an option. It give him and his family stability. It give the kids some stability rather than every single year you'd be reading about Joseph Suwali in the paper and everyone will just get the shits with him.
Yep.
Just let the kid have some stability and let him be a young kid and let him grow up. Sign him for 3 years or 5 years, whatever it is. Sign him with legal, sign him with union, let him be. Leave him alone.
Nathan Brown, I love it when you talk like that. You go and have a little break, Gerds. Okay, Sterlo will
talks a lot more sense than Gerds, doesn't he, Brownie?
Sure, yeah.
We'll come back
it's
with
like,
more
it's
of
like
that
doing
sense
a show with my wife.
Right after this on the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot, and strong. Install a Ream.